Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries daily worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So, stay tuned for tonight's special report on business principles when we come back. Well, 3,300 years ago, Moses instructed our fathers. He said, "You shall not have in your bag diverse weights, a great and a small. You shall not have in your house diverse measures, a great and a small. But you shall have a perfect and a just weight. A perfect and a just measure shall you have." Well, our founding fathers at the Constitutional Convention back in 1787 followed that scriptural principle of law when they put into our Constitution, at Article 1, Section 10, these 17 words. It says, "No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin, a tender in payment of debt." Well, in 1933, President Roosevelt took our gold away, and in 1964, President Johnson took silver coin out of circulation, and now, in place of these just weights and balances, these two presidents have introduced into our current practice of our monetary system the first, second, and fifth planks to the Communist Manifesto. And they have given us Federal Reserve notes in place of gold-backed treasury bills and clad coinage in place of silver coin. Now, in the intervening 70 years or so, we Americans have gone from being the world's number one creditor nation until today we're the world's number one debtor nation. Now, who do you think were the better financial planners for our country? Moses and our founding fathers, or Franklin D. Roosevelt and Lyndon Baines Johnson? Now, if you'd like to learn more about hard money and how to use it properly, it's another of the many lessons that we teach in our Mosaic Law School, conducted twice a year here at the law school in Isabella. If you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package first? Doesn't cost you anything. That's the place to start. This may not be for you. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general, and remember, it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining, and best of all, it's free, and you can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, our Mosaic Law School is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org. Click onto the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. That's georgegordon.org, and then go to the archives page. All right, we're talking about business principles. I pointed out to you last time that there's just two business models on planet Earth. It's the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto that everybody in the world subscribes to. It's the norm. It's the everyday garden variety. It's what everybody buys. And then there's the Ten Commandment model. Now, here in the United States, we practice this Ten Commandment model, using that as the model for our business practices in this country between 1787 and 1933. Then in 1933, we deviated from that and went into a program called the New Deal, and we implemented the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto by government mandate, coast to coast and border to border, and that's what we've been living on ever since. Now, I notice that a lot of people complain about it. It doesn't mean that they want to change it. They just want to complain about it. I took a look at the business model. I was a practicing communist for many years, and I took a look at the business model, and I decided I didn't like it. I didn't know what to replace it with. So I started doing some research and looked into the question of business, and looked into the question of bureaucracy and so on. And I came to the conclusion from Blackstone's commentaries. If you want to know where this is spelled out in spades, it's a fellow by the name of Blackstone. He was an English judge, wrote some books back in 1757, I believe it was, or thereabouts. It was a long time ago, before the Declaration of Independence. And Lord Blackstone wrote two volumes called Blackstone's Commentaries, and he laid out the distinctions between our English common law and the Babylonian mystery religion. Now, this thing called the Babylonian mystery religion that you read about from Alexander Hislop, for instance, isn't called that today. We have different names that we apply to things. So, we don't call it the Babylonian mystery religion, we call it the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto. Some people call it socialism, others Nazism, fascism, communism, you know, there's various names that you hang on here. It's central planning, that's another good term. Our president, Barack Obama, is a socialist, and as evidenced by the bills and plans and the legislation that he promotes. And it's very popular, and it has been very popular in the world for the past 150 years. It was first espoused in modern times by a fellow named Karl Marx, who wrote this up and submitted it to the International Socialist Union. And he won the competition at their convention in Paris, France in 1848. Karl Marx. And he wrote these Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto. Now, that was the modern interpretation of what was or had been in existence for thousands of years. It was the Babylonian mystery religion. And it calls for certain things, you know, like the abolition of all right to property. That's the first plank. Free public education for all children in public school. A central bank with total control over the issuance of money and credit. A heavy progressive income tax, an inheritance tax. Those are just some of the provisions of the Communist Manifesto. Now, we practice that every day. Every day you send your child to public school, you're practicing the 10th plank. Every time that you sign a voucher for your credit card purchases, you're practicing the 5th plank. Every year when you fill out your 1040 form, or every week when you receive your paycheck, you are practicing the second plank called the heavy progressive income tax, or the 8th plank, which calls for Social Security. Now, you're very familiar with those, and I'm sure that you're very happy and satisfied with them. But from time to time, when I talk to people here, particularly students, they complain about these events. They say government is taking too much in the income tax. They're not opposed to the income tax. They're just opposed to the too much portion of it. They're not opposed to public school. They're just opposed to sex education and evolutionary philosophy in public school. They're not opposed to paper money and centralized banking. They're just opposed to the banks going broke and then requiring us to pay for bailing them out. They get very excited and upset about that. So most people are not opposed to these 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. They're opposed to the excesses that they go to. Now, here's the problem that you have. Say, once you've accepted this, then the excesses go along with it. I mean, it's like free sex, you know. Once you get free sex, there are some side effects that go with it, like STDs and premarital pregnancy. It's part and parcel with the product. It's what you get at no extra charge. So if you wanted to avoid that, then the safest thing to do is to reject it. Now, the opposite to this is called the 10 Commandment model. Now, The Ten Commandment model calls for gold and silver coin and no unjust weights and balances, no interest or usury, home school for your children, no income tax, tithing takes its place. Now, if you ask people, would you rather pay an income tax or tithe, they will tell you plainly, I would rather pay a 40% income tax than a 10% tithe. And that's borne out by the way people live their lives. So I'm not here to persuade you that you should give up the 40% income tax in favor of a 10% tithe, because it would work in your self-interest and you'd save 30%. I can see that most people prefer to pay the 40% to the state than they would 10% to God, and that's because they hate God. Hate Him. Always have. Do now and will continue to. Now, for the sake of the discussion here that we're making, though, the Ten Commandment model, which comes from God, includes such things as gold and silver coin in place of Federal Reserve notes, checks, and credit cards, and homeschool in place of free education for all children in public school, and tithing in place of income tax, and gold coin in place of the fifth plank central banking, and individual responsibility in place of limited liability, inequity, which is manifested by the Social Security tax and so on. All of these 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto act in opposition to one or more of the 10 Commandments. So you've got one or the other, and as far as I can tell, here on planet Earth, we only have one or the other. You don't have 2, 5, or 9 to choose from. So with that background in mind, now, the last time we were talking about these individual business principles, number 27, I said, if you never do business with a thief, you'll never be stolen from. So I said, remember, if you do business with the mafia. I ask you, do you do business with the mafia? And the students all look at you like you're stupid. Well, of course I don't do business with the mafia. So I ask them, why not? And they say, well, because they're criminals. And I say, well, how many of you do business with government? And everybody raises their hands. And I said, now, can you tell me the difference between the mafia and government? And everybody kind of looks at you stupidly. And they say, well, now, you're complaining about the income tax and the bailouts. You're complaining about Darwin in your public schools and sex education. So you don't like the 10th plank, or at least you don't like some of the manifestation of it. But you put up with it, you tolerate it, and you're doing business with government in the process. And then you're complaining about it. Now, has it occurred to you that if you'd stop doing business with government, you'd probably have about as much complaint about government as you do with the mafia? Now, I'm not complaining about the mafia. I don't borrow money from them. I don't pay interest to them. I don't buy their numbers. I don't buy their lottery tickets, you know. And they're not messing with me, and I'm not messing with them. And I think that you could live in New York City probably pretty well. If you didn't do business with the mafia, they probably wouldn't do business with you. Now, if you don't do business with the government, you'll get the same kind of result. I don't have any complaints with government, and I don't have any complaints with the mafia. And I don't do business with either one. See how simple that is? All right, that's a business principle. Number 28. If you always eat the best first, you'll always have the best. I learned that from old John Newhart years and years ago. I was just a kid, 15 years old. If you always eat the best first, you'll always have the best. And he was right. You see, you don't have to take every deal that comes by. Why don't you just take the good deals and let the bad ones go by? Number 29, there is no substitute for diligence and hard work. Diligence and hard work. Most people, when they're working for wages, they want to work as little as possible and collect as much as they can. Have you ever thought about changing that out? and working as hard as you can and taking as little as you need in return. I know it's a wild new concept, but if you do that, you'd always be employed. And you want to know why? Because, you see, every employer is a dirty, capitalist, selfish pig. And the employee who is making him a profit couldn't be driven away with a club. You can't get rid of a profitable servant. No employer has ever fired a profitable servant. So, could you make yourself profitable through diligence and hard work? Now, in business, you get what you pay for. And oftentimes, I notice that people want to buy the cheapest thing that they can get away with. And my experience has been when you buy cheap, you get cheap. So I try to avoid cheap by buying quality. And so when I buy a skill saw, I always buy an old Milwaukee, a Milwaukee brand. In other words, if you buy the best that money can buy, it lasts and lasts and lasts. It's like the Energizer Rabbit. So I try to buy the better product that lasts longer. It costs more, but it's cheaper in the long run. And so instead of buying a cheap Yugo, I think if you could afford it and bought a Rolls Royce, you'd do better. You know, the 1927 Rolls Royce is still in operation. When you pay $100,000 for a car, you don't scrap it out for no good cause. In business, you get what you pay for. Now, a lot of times I think people think of business as being something like J.P. Morgan dealing in commercial instruments and money and debentures and Federal Reserve notes. You know, business doesn't have to deal in money. It can deal in wheat, corn, beans, honey, oil, reciprocity. I mean, you could come over and mow my grass, and I could come over and rototill your garden. And both of us would profit. And we don't have to have any monetary value, but we both have what we wanted, needed, and desired. And both of us are now profited by it. So in business, you get what you pay for, and a satisfied customer is the best value for your advertising dollar. If your customer is happy and satisfied with what you have delivered to him, whether you mowed his grass or rototilled his garden, he is going to be out advertising for you and telling everybody that he knows, and everybody knows 10 people. And he's going to be out telling those 10 people that he knows, hey, this guy Gordon came over and rototilled my garden, mowed my grass, or did this, that, or something else. And the crazy nitwit is very diligent and he works hard. Hey, you just can't beat somebody running around telling others about how diligent you are and how hard you work. Now, a business without a plan is like a ship without a rudder. That's number 32. A business without a plan is like a ship without a rudder. So you have to have a plan. Where are you going with this business? What is it that you want to accomplish? What is it that you're trying to get? I cannot give you what it is you want until you first communicate to me what it is that you're seeking. So if you'll tell me what it is you want, then I can ask you, well, what are you willing to pay for it? And then I can tell you, yes, I can satisfy your needs, wants, and desires. Now, credit business is bad business. That's number 33. Credit business is not necessarily illegal. It isn't necessarily unlawful, a tort or a trespass. But I can tell you plainly, from personal experience, that credit business is bad business, and cash business is the best business. And sometimes credit business pays off, and sometimes credit business has greater profit or greater benefit to it. I'll show you why and how as we progress along. But as a general rule, if you can avoid credit and credit business, unless you have an articulable plan as to how you're going to carry out this credit business and why this credit business is the best form of transaction in this particular case, you'd do well to avoid it. If you just remember that credit business is bad business unless there's a compelling need or reason, and that'll go a long ways to helping you avoid bad business. Now, number 34, the single most important thing in business is getting paid. In fact, I could go so far as to say it's the only reason for business. And then a little later on, I'm going to show you that profit is the only purpose for business. It doesn't exist for any other reason. Business does not exist to employ people. It is true that as a collateral side effect, people are employed sometimes by business transactions, but it's never the purpose for the business transaction to employ people. And business does not exist for the purpose of producing products, goods, or services. It is true that business oftentimes, as a collateral matter, will produce some goods or services or products. And that's oftentimes good and is beneficial. But that's not the reason or the purpose for the business transaction. Profit is. Now remember, the profit does not have to be in the form of money. So it isn't necessary to enter a business transaction for the purpose of making dollars. That isn't necessary. As I mentioned before, it could be that the purpose is to get your garden rototilled. And by getting your garden rototilled, it's profit. In the rototilling of your garden, it might employ somebody. And it might actually produce some tomatoes and peppers, which would be goods and products, and that might be a benefit to somebody, but that's not the reason for doing it. And profit was the motivation. Always remember that. And aside from profit, there isn't any other reason for doing business. And the single most important thing then in business is getting paid. Did you get what it was that you had in mind when you set your business plan in operation? Because if you didn't get what it was that you wanted, then you failed in your business enterprise. Number 35, if you need a license to do your business, then your business is a criminal activity. And the reason we know that is because the definition of a license is permission to do something that's illegal, unlawful, a tort, or a trespass. So, by and large, all corporate business, all licensed businesses, all of the professions are criminal activities. And we know that because they require a license. Those of us that operate without licenses are operating in free enterprise, private business. So if you're operating with a license, you're not operating in free enterprise. You're operating in monopoly. You're operating in bureaucracy. It's a socialist enterprise with a license, permit. Now, if you can operate your business without a license or a permit, then you're in a common law occupation, and then you're doing business in the free market. And then that free market out there is where all of the goods are. That's where you want to be. That's where the property is. And there's no income tax to pay on property because property has never been the subject of income here in the United States. Now, I can't speak for your country per se, but in the Anglo-Saxon countries, and probably in places like India and Pakistan where your law came from, the Anglo-Saxons, you probably are practicing the same Ten Commandment model. Unless your government has changed from the Ten Commandments to the Ten Planks with specificity, you're probably still practicing the old Anglo-Saxon common law, which comes from the Ten Commandments, which came from Moses, which came from Mount Sinai, which came from God himself. All right, so credit business is bad business, and the single most important thing in business is getting paid. And if you need a license to do your business, then your business is a criminal activity. You'd be better advised to avoid these criminal activities, if it's at all possible. There's nothing wrong with making a good profit. So if you've been made to feel bad because you're making a profit, you want to remember that God himself separates people out by calling them profitable servants and unprofitable servants. And he says very plainly that he wants profitable servants. And the unprofitable servant he wants to cast out. So profit, then, is good. I know it's a four-letter word. I'm not denying that. In fact, there's a number of four-letter words that go right along with that. It's things like entrepreneur, capitalist, free market, free enterprise, competition, free choice, and profit. All of those are four-letter words to monopolists and bureaucrats. No, I don't deny that. But it's not a four-letter word to your creator, and it's not a four-letter word in the free enterprise system. So there's nothing wrong with making a good profit. Well, what is a good profit as opposed to a bad profit or a poor profit? The general rule is the 2% principle. I call it the 2% principle. If you practice the 2% principle, you buy it for a dollar and you sell it for two. You buy it for a dollar and sell it for two. I call that the 2% principle. So if you can maintain a profit margin of 2%, that is, you buy it for a dollar, that's one, and then you sell it for $2, that's your 2%. Got that? I told a young fella here that one day. He's a Jewish fella, and I thought he was going to swallow his dentures. And he said, "Oh, Mr. Gordon, that's 100% markup. That's a 50% profit." And I said, "Well, there you go. I'm using that higher math again. See, I'm just a farmer, and I don't use high math. And we just want to keep it simple, stupid. It's the KISS principle. Buy it for one, sell it for two." Number 37, a business is like a ship, and it has room for only one captain. Trying to do business by committee, and that's the way government and bureaucracy and monopoly work. They work with committees, and they're very inefficient, and they have to be subsidized, and they have to be fed and clothed and housed with the subsidies that come from the taxpayers, just like Goldman Sachs, J.P. Morgan, and Bank of America. See, those are monopolies, and those monopolies are inefficient. And monopoly and bureaucracy cannot survive. They always collapse. Well, they always have in the past. And they're in the process of doing that right in front of your eyeballs today. And I think we could extrapolate that into the future and say, well, that's always been the way it was in the past, and it's the way it is now, and it'll always be that way in the future. But these monopolists and bureaucrats always have high hopes. They say, well, the next time. It's almost like next year in Jerusalem. Next year in Jerusalem. Or it's like the next year, next year, next year with the Brooklyn Dodgers, remember? Yeah. Someday, we'll beat the Yankees. All right, keeping that in mind, then, there's nothing wrong with making a good profit, and the business is like a ship, and it has room for only one captain. And so whoever it is that owns this business or runs this business is the guy that makes the decisions. Number 38, in business, there's no substitute for experience. So if you think you're going to open up this business and go out here and do this with no experience and no knowledge, good luck. You're going to need it. You have to pay your dues. That's what the bottom line is, dues. And the dues require that you learn your craft, learn your trade, learn your business. And that may take you a few years to learn how to do that. It doesn't have to. I learned to set chokers in about 6 days. At the end of 6 days, I was as good as anybody there. Number 39, good business is based on performance, not trust. Remember this trust thing, don't trust anybody? And that's because good business is based on performance. And if you're performing, you don't have to go around telling people, you know, hey, you can trust me. They can already see by your performance. You will know them by their fruits. That's what Jesus said. You'll know them by their fruits, not by their much speaking. Now, number 40, all wealth comes out of the ground. So, what we're looking for here is property. We're looking for wealth. That comes out of the ground. Now, monopolists and bureaucrats say, no, no, that's not true. The wealth comes out of contract. Wealth comes out of legislation. Wealth comes out of the legislature. Sign here. Make this contract with us. Sign up for Social Security. Sign up for National Health Care Insurance. Well, I don't have Social Security. I don't have a Social Security number. I'm not signing up for National Health Care Insurance. And that's because wealth. That's wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil. Gold, silver, all of that comes out of the ground, and it requires diligence and hard work to dig it out of the ground and use it. And that's where wealth is located, in the ground. So I'm not signing up for these get-rich-quick schemes, and I'm not going to celebrate my golden years in a Winnebago, driving around America, living on your, or living off of, your Social Security contributions. Hey, we're at the halfway point here, boys and girls, so I'm going to have to give you a reminder that you are listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, and that we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now remember, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log schedule and archives. All of it can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date. That's for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour and is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one by calling and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, and click onto the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there, georgegordon.org, and go to the archives page. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements, these recommendations that we give, don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we are reviewing from our business school, kind of the precursor to business school, which is the business principles. A lot of times people want to know, well, what is it that you believe about business? And I'm reminded when I'm asked that of Mayor Bloomberg of New York. And he was asked if he was going to run for president in the year 2012. And he said, no, I'm not going to run for president. And so the reporter wanted to know, well, why? Why aren't you going to run for president? And he said, well, it's because I'm not in sync with and I'm opposed to every special interest group in America. And the reporter didn't understand that and said, well, what is it that you're not in sync with? And he said, well, I'm pro-gun control. So the gun control lobby won't vote for me. He says, I'm pro-choice. So those that are not pro-choice are not going to vote for me, and that's about half the electorate. He says, I'm pro-immigration. And he said, most of the people in the country are opposed to pro-immigration. He says, I'm pro-health care insurance. And about half the people in the country or more are opposed to health care insurance. And I'm for tax increases. And most people in the country are opposed to tax increases. And he said, and worse than that, I believe in Darwin. And, you know, after he said that, I thought to myself, I said, well, that's about as honest as you can be. So I want to tell you that I'm opposed to everything that Mayor Bloomberg is in favor of. I don't believe in Darwin. I'm opposed to tax increases. I'm opposed to pro-health care insurance. I'm opposed to pro-immigration. I'm opposed to pro-choice. And I'm opposed to pro-gun control. I'm opposed to everything that he's in favor of. That being the case, then that pretty well says to me that if I was going to vote for somebody, I would not vote for Mayor Bloomberg. All right, now, that'll help you a great deal. And I tell students when they come in the door, this may not be for you. If you're a monopolist and a bureaucrat, if you're a socialist, a communist, a fascist, a Nazi, or some other kind of big government control freak, you're not going to be happy with this school at all. This law school is not for you. You should stay as far away from here as you can get. And I try to tell my students also that a prophet has no honor in his own country. And right here in my own neighborhood, I'm hated, I'm reviled, I'm despised. People call me everything but a white man. And they call me a liar, a thief, a cheat, a fraud, the Antichrist, a false prophet. I mean, you know, if there's anything that somebody has that's derogatory, they'll hang it on me or my wife. And so you should know that going in. Jesus said, you'll know them by their fruit. So I thought, well, there's just no better way to tell people what I think about business than to tell you, well, here's what my business principles are. And when you come into a business deal with me, this is what you can expect. And I like Mayor Bloomberg. He told me exactly what it is that he believes, what he's for, what he's against. I said, thank you very much, Mr. Bloomberg. I don't want to buy anything that you've got. But I appreciate your honesty, your integrity, and your candor. Thank you, Mayor Bloomberg. Now, last time, before we took our break here, I said all wealth comes out of the ground. The world is filled with wealth. There's all kinds of raw materials. But like your receivables. You know, there's all this wealth here, but you got to work like hell to collect it. So you got to get out there and you got to work to get this wealth out of the ground. That takes diligence and hard work. Now, number 41, working for wages is the antithesis of business. It's the exact opposite. Now, it is true that every working man is, in fact, a businessman. I wouldn't deny that. You're selling your labor. But you're selling it arithmetically, and the basic principle of business is geometric progression. If you want to make money, business is the place to go. And business multiplies wealth, 1, 2, 4, 8, 16. But working for wages accumulates wealth, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So you'll make a good living, and I won't deny that, but working for wages is the opposite to business. Now, number 42, if you never go surety, you'll never pay another man's debt. That comes from six scriptures in Proverbs, six places. The creator of the universe said, never go surety, never guarantee somebody else's debt. You know, if you think about it, it's kind of crazy, but, you know, your kid comes to you and says, Dad, I'd like to buy a big screen TV and I have to have a co-signer. Would you sign for me? I've done it, and you've done it, and everybody does it, and it always comes to a no good end. And God told you it was going to come to a no good end. Never go surety, and you'll never pay another man's debt. And so I don't, you know, I don't have anything against you, but when you come to me and say, hey, would you sign for me? No. Why don't you save your money and go pay cash? Number 43, a good product sells itself over and over. You don't have to tell people how good your product is. Your customers will tell everybody that they know how good your product is if they like it. Now, if they don't like it, they'll go out and tell all their friends, this stuff sucks, it's crummy, it's crappy, don't buy it. That hurts. That hurts, because everybody knows 10 friends. And if they would tell their 10 friends how good your product was, then you'd make one sale. So if you have 10 people that are bad-mouthing you, then you lost 10 sales. Don't be discouraged by that. You cannot please everybody all the time. Jesus could not please everybody all the time. Moses couldn't please everybody all the time. But he pleased a good number of people some of the time, and it paid very well. So if you can just please some of the people some of the time, they all have 10 friends, and they'll tell their 10 friends, and you'll sell one out of every 10. That's the statistical average. All right, now, a lazy businessman is a poor businessman. Lazy and businessman are antithesis terms. They're opposite. You know, the workday ends at 5 o'clock for wage earners, but the business day does not end at 5 o'clock. So a lazy businessman doesn't close up the store and go home. He goes back into his office and does that work, which the wage earner does during the day, he does at night and on weekends. A businessman is a guy that is working 18 hours a day and he's working 6 days a week. Not seven now. You have to stop on the Sabbath. But an 18-hour day isn't a bad work day. And so don't think that it is. And from time to time, being self, you know, self-employed, or being a trader at law on a cash basis without recourse to standard dollars lawful money, which is what I do, I'm a trader at law, is a good life, and it's a good way to be, but the workday doesn't end at 5. And lazy does not go well for people that want to quit at 5. So make up your mind that you're going to have to work you know, 10, 12, 14 hours a day. Number 45, incentive and productivity go together. There's just nothing like being driven to do a job and getting paid, or getting paid more, or getting a bonus, or getting something extra. This is why in the military they give people medals. They don't give them money, they give them medals. And then they strive harder. That's an incentive. I want to win the Purple Heart, the Congressional Medal of Honor. I want to get ribbons on my chest. I want to get more stripes on my sleeve. In private business, in free enterprise, when you reward people for their outstanding performance, you know, the guy that works harder than everybody else, and he's a profitable servant, and he makes you $30 or $35 an hour, why don't you give him a raise? Why don't you pay him more? Why don't you give him benefits and bonuses? Why don't you give him a company car to drive? That'll create even more incentive in him. First of all, it creates incentive in the recipient, and number two, it creates a desire to excel in the rest of your employees. Number 46, when looking for a product to sell, select one that's small and valuable. I'm oftentimes reminded that an $80,000 truck loaded with 40,000 pounds of corn, driving down the highway to the elevator, is worth about $3,000. That's right. $3,000 worth of corn riding in an $80,000 truck. And I'm reminded that oftentimes you can have a $5,000 package that fits in a $5 box that goes out of the post office. So you're better off selling diamond rings that fit into small boxes than 40,000 pound loads of corn. So when you're looking for a product to sell, select one that's small and very valuable. It's called the principle of the pearl of great price. Number 47, in business, doing the impossible is routine. We have to be problem solvers. We have to be able to solve the problems of our customers. After all, that's why our customer is coming to us to start with. And oftentimes these problems that people have are impossible. Well, they're impossible to the guy that has the problem, and that's why he came to you. And so the businessman is a problem solver. He is solving problems for his customers. Think about it. You get sued, and you don't know what to do, so you go to your lawyer. And you pay your lawyer to handle the lawsuit. Well, why do you do that? Well, because it's impossible for you because you don't know how. If you knew how, it wouldn't be impossible. But it's not impossible to the lawyer. Handling lawsuits is his business. When you get cancer, you don't know what to do, so you go to a doctor. He doesn't know what to do either, so you have a case of the blind leading the blind. But what you're looking for, here is somebody that knows the answer to the riddle. So to the businessman, solving the impossible or doing the impossible is routine. He does it every day. So if you've got cancer, what you really need is a naturopath. He can cure the cancer. Well, most of the time, you know, 80, 90% of the time, there's always a couple of times he won't succeed, but most of the time he will. So in business, doing the impossible is routine. Now, 48, success in business is determined by accomplishment, not by intent. You know, the world is made up of people that mean well. They're honest to God, good guys, and they mean well, and they have good intentions. But, you know, the old adage says the road to hell is paved with good intentions. Well, success in business is determined by accomplishment. Can you win that lawsuit for the client? Can you cure that man's cancer? You know, if you can cure that man's cancer, he's going to go out and preach to everybody that he knows, everybody that he sees, about how he had cancer and it was Doc so-and-so over here that cured it. Or I had this lawsuit and it was old lawyer Joe Baloney over here that won that case for me. So success in business, then, is determined by your accomplishments, not by your intent or by your much speaking. Number 49, everything costs more than your original estimate. And I don't know how many times I've run across that. I'm an old-timey general contractor, and you can go out here and price this thing out, and I don't care how many times you do that, you'll always come up short. So you price it out and then add 20% to it. And if you do that, you know, most of the time you'll come out at about zero, but, you know, if you add a third to it, you might not get the job, but then remember, you never lost any money on any deal you didn't make. And it's when you underbid the job, and then you go out there and accomplish the job and finish it and find out that it cost you $550 to come out here and remodel this kitchen. That's kind of a heartbreaker, you know that? And I think you'd be better off if you let somebody else take that job and let them lose $580. I've always said, better for you to lose $580 on a job that I bid too much on than for me to lose $580 on a job that I didn't bid enough on. I'd rather you lose, Bob, than me. So why don't you go ahead and do the job? Be my guest. Number 50, the most competitive business has the lowest prices, best products, and the best service. So when we're talking about business practice, if you've ever been in a Walmart store and you take a look at the way it's being conducted, then go into a Kmart store and then take a look at the way it's being conducted, can you see why Walmart is more successful than Kmart? I mean, it'll stand out like a sore thumb. And the people at Kmart ought to drive over and go into a Walmart store and just start doing what they do there at Walmart. The Kmart people already have the store and the goods on the shelf. All they need to do is to market it and operate their store just like they do down there at Walmart. And they will at least be equal with Walmart. As it stands today, they're subservient to or poorer than. All right, so the most competitive business has to have the lowest prices, best products, and the best service. And that's what you're striving to do. That's why you work past 5 o'clock to provide better service. And that's why you're looking for the best products that you can sell. And you want to sell those prices for at least the same that your competitor is selling, or lower, or have some kind of a better program that works better for your customers, even if your prices are higher. Number 51, every dollar cut from overhead is a dollar of profit that goes straight to your bottom line. It's very common for companies when they merge then to eliminate whole departments. Let's suppose, for instance, we have two construction companies. Each one of these construction companies has a payroll department. As soon as we merge, the payroll department of Company A will now take over and do the payroll of Company B. See how simple that is? The purchasing department of Company B will take over, and then they will do all of the purchasing for Company A and Company B. So we eliminate one purchasing department and one payroll department. That produces an excess. The money that we were spending on those costs now go right straight to the bottom line. Conversely, by doubling your production, does not double your profit. Doubling your production does not double your profit. And that's because we have a progressive income tax, so the more money you make, the more money you have to pay in tax. That being the case, then it isn't to your advantage to make more money, it's to your advantage to cut costs. Cut costs. And it costs less money to cut costs because that dollar goes straight to your bottom line. to increase your productivity, you have to spend more money. So you have to have more capital invested in order to produce more, in order to make more, so that you can pay more taxes, but you can't double your profit. And so the best way to put profit on your bottom line is to cut costs. And every dollar cut from overhead is a dollar of profit that goes straight to your bottom line. Number 52, a business financed with borrowed money is most likely to fail. All right, that's very important. 90% of new businesses fail in their first year. Well, that's what the banks tell us, and that's because the banks lend them money. Did it ever occur to us that we ought not to borrow money? In fact, if you have to borrow money to start your business, the business isn't profitable. Because if the business is profitable, you can start at zero COD and just sell one. Take the profit from one, buy two and sell two. Take the profit from two and buy four and sell four. Take the profit from four and buy eight and then sell eight and so on. That's geometric progression. If your business works, 1, 2, 4, 8, 16, by the time you get up to about 128, 256, and 512, you don't need to borrow any money. You've already got the profit generating in the turnover of your inventory. So a profitable business does not need any borrowed money to start with. If you need to borrow money to start your business, the business is unprofitable coming out of the chute. And that's why a business financed with borrowed money is most likely to fail, and 90% of them do. Now, number 53, practice the 2% principle. I mentioned it earlier, buy it for a dollar and sell it for two. The correct markup is 50%. So if you buy something for $25, the correct selling price is 50. If it costs you $25 to make an item, then the correct selling price is 50. There are some exceptions to that. Jewelry has two or three marks in it, and milk has a 10% markup in it. So does gasoline. So depending upon what you're selling and what the market price is and what the market will bear has something to do with its selling price. But as a general rule, we use what we call the keystone markup. Keystone markup. That means that you mark it up. That amount that you paid for it. Build your barn first, and then build your house from the profit from your barn. Most people have that backwards, and they want to go out and buy a new house first. So they buy their new house. Huh? Excuse me? Don't you think that you should build your barn first so that your barn and your cattle are making you profit, and then build your house from your profit? Rather than build your house from your capital. Now, boys and girls, if you're a professional, you've already been conned into borrowing money to get your education. You're building your barn second. You're building your house first. You're going into debt to build your house. That's your profession. And you haven't made a dollar's worth of profit, and you haven't sold anything yet. Isn't that putting the cart before the horse? Hey, we'll take it up right there when we come back next time here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Meanwhile, you've been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. That's for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, our time's up. I got to leave it right there. So we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody. And Good night, friends.